Good afternoon. You're listening to the Kill Radio Tuesday News. This is John, and today is March, 7th or something, 2006. Iraq body count for today, just real quick, from iraqbodycount.net. They need your donations. I'm going to read a little thing that they have on their site because I read their thing at the beginning of every news hour. But now they have this little thing at the beginning of the site. It says, since our appeal was launched in January 2006, over 200 visitors have contributed to Iraq Body Count's fundraising appeal. This has temporarily ensured our capacity to continue the basic work of recording media-reported civilian victims of the military solution for Iraq. Military solution is in quotes. But much more needs doing. Post-invasion violence in Iraq continues to worsen. There are increasing numbers of violent deaths which have passed without public notice. These include growing numbers of disappearances, assassinations, and bodies discovered en masse. Tracking down regular and reliable reports of these deaths will require increased capacity. And the growing database we have amassed needs careful statistical analyses for full understanding of trends and patterns. We would like to update the breakdowns contained in our earlier dossier as the third anniversary of the war passes. And all this costs time and money. If you have not donated to our work, please consider doing so now. You can go to www.iraqbodycount.net. And now I'm entering the site, iraqbodycount.net. Number of civilians reported killed by military intervention in Iraq, minimum 28,864, maximum 32,506.
Hail to the scumbag, the motherfucking president. Fucking piece of shit. Scumbag, asshole, fucking retard, scumbag.
I am joined by Divas for Democracy. You can check out their website while you listen to us live right now at fromkillradio.org at divasfordemocracy.com. Everybody, introduce yourselves. Say hello. Who am I talking to?
This is Joe Olson.
Hi, Carol Myers.
Hi, my name is Dan Licht.
So, normally in the Kill Radio news, I just sort of hang out and read articles and play media files and make smarmy comments. But today I actually have some progressive grassroots organizers, and it's a real treat. So tell me, one at a time or collectively, what is Divas for Democracy?
Divas for Democracy. We are a group of people who essentially decided after the election of 2004, in which we had a stunning and unexplainable defeat. That was sarcastic. We decided that one of our downfalls as really liberal progressives was that we didn't have a consistent time and place to meet and talk about our ideas and talk about our paradigms and be able to formulate strategies from those thoughts. And so after that election, we decided to keep our momentum going, and we formed this little club of sort of ferocious people who meet every week on Monday nights.
Every week. So that's commitment. Do you really draw on the crowd, the sizable portion of the group every week?
We do. We only have seven members, and we usually have between four and seven members present. So it's a small and exclusive group of people, but that helps us do what we need to do in a way that makes sense and is very easy to digest. And we're also very politically aligned. So mm-hmm. It's rare that six people or seven people sit in a room and are as politically aligned as the six of us are.
You don't have like the one Republican member that you just like throw stuff at?
We did, but it met a terrible, terrible end.
I'm sure. They met their rapture.
Exactly. And we actually all met on bus trips to Arizona. You would think we were all best friends from years and years, but we actually only met about 2 years ago when we all started becoming active in various and assorted campaigns, but we all ended up meeting on these bus trips into hell, which is really what they were.
Sorry for anybody in Arizona who's listening, but it was hell, and it was in the summer, and it was hot, and they didn't like us.
And we still had a good time.
That's true.
So is this a hierarchical sort of organization, or is it a collectivist organization? Is somebody in charge?
It's hierarchical. We switch leaders every week. No, not really.
It's
we're
like,
not really
hierarchical. It's like the UN.
And we obviously have male divas, so we're very inclusive, too.
There are divos.
There are divos.
As well as divas.
It came about on the bus trips because at one point we were called by somebody Divas, and it just stuck. Uh-huh. So the guys that rode the buses with us too, we just became a collective Diva thing, and many of us were involved in other local. Here comes another Diva. There's no parking in Diva Land.
Sorry, I had to drive back to Venison Park and park
in front of my house. We were all involved in various ways with the grassroots movements in and around Los Angeles, especially leading up to the election campaign. And different people have different talents. I mean, some people stayed in town and did voter registration. Other people did canvassing. And for some reason, we all felt it in the best interest to get on a bus and go someplace else. And we sort of bonded on the road. This is Diva Leah. She just came.
Hi. Yeah, I was doing voter registration at the Santa Monica Farmers Market, which is like the vortex of liberalism, mm-hmm. in Los Angeles. And people were walking up to me saying, "Why are you here? We're good. Go someplace else. Go to a red state." And what happened with me was that the Swift boat thing was like the final.
That was the straw that broke
the camel's
back.
That was it. That was like, all right, that's it. I'm getting on a bus.
Yeah, that actually, a similar situation happened with my mother. She decided in 2004 that she wanted to volunteer and help carry out some way. Mm-hmm. And she lives in Maryland. And she went to an organization there and to the carry camp there. And they were like, actually, no, we're good. Southern Pennsylvania,
yeah.
So she ended up knocking on doors around Southern Pennsylvania, and she ended up with some really interesting stories that unfortunately amounted to nothing. But that's the same. I mean, you know, Democrats can get every vote and still lose, apparently.
It was very astonishing to actually be a firsthand witness to all of the monkey business, at least some of the monkey business that was going on. And we all know that voting is a rare thing, and it's a thing that we might not have for long, and we probably don't have. And if you really look at election protection, we have problems at every area, and we definitely witnessed those sort of intimidation issues of not having enough places to vote, issues of redirecting people to different voting places that weren't correct. And we were firsthand. We were literally, I was on the ground in Phoenix on election day, bringing water, bringing granola bars, bringing whatever we could rustle up at, you know, 8 p.m., 9 p.m., 10 p.m., stay in line, mm-hmm. Don't let them shut you out. When the numbers came in, we were literally all crying in our hotel suite. It was astonishing. I mean, it was unbelievable. The groundwork that we had done and having that big of a spread loss was just...
Were they using the Diebold machines there as well?
I'm not sure, because we were working in a lot of different precincts, so I'm not sure which ones were and which... We weren't even inside. We were outside, actually, trying to pep up the people and sort of do the pep rally thing outside in the lines. And then to go on and hear about all the disasters that occurred after people were already driven away from mm-hmm. voting is, well, it's really shocking, actually. It's horrifying.
I was sitting at a poll, and everyone has their election day, but I was poll watching in Las Vegas, and it just amazed me how much more organized they were. On the Republican side, there'd be like somebody come in and he'd have a PDA and he'd mark down everybody who'd vote. And then the next person would come in, he'd have his mm-hmm. job. And then we were like, we were scratching things off, you know, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2.
Now, does anybody have a pencil with wood?
Yeah.
Why do you think it is that they're so much better organized? Because I think everybody, I mean,
they're paid.
Because
they're fascists.
Well, but seriously, I mean, it's not, do you think they just want it more?
They're
well,
paid.
They have corporate money behind them.
They're paid.
Them. They have, yeah, unlimited resources.
So it's just easier
resources,
though,
yeah.
For them because they have
well,
the resources.
And I also think it's sort of a, it's who they are. I mean, they demand and they expect and they want nothing less than lockstep conformity. That's their agenda.
They're good Germans.
Yeah, and that's what they get from their people, and they don't have that kind of, you know. You know, if you're a nonconformist, you're not a Republican. I mean, you know, we're all just like, oh, save the whales and the the seals and the vegans and, you know.
And a lot was also, I mean, from what I saw in Arizona after six trips, a lot of trips, I'm having my shoes admired. There was a lot of intimidation. We were in Casa Grande, which was kind of fun in a really Route 66 way, she said kindly. and some Native women came into the little storefront campaign office, and it was so cool because they were organizing for once. They were arranging to bring elders down to vote, and we just heard all sorts of crazy stuff that was going on. My favorite story was that at some prior election, you know, they had signs up, or it could have even been then, but they were ripping them down. But the famous story was about the signs about did all the Republicans vote on Tuesday and all the Democrats vote on Monday or Wednesday or rather.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, and there was really stuff going on like that, and I spoke to a man who was gardening, and he, you know, and I said, "Are you registered to vote?" And blah blah blah. And he's like, "No, I can't. You know, you don't want to pry." And he said, "No, I can't." And I said, "Are you sure you can't?" And he goes, "Yeah, I'm a felon." I said, "Oh, well, you know, some of the rules has changed, and I'm not going to ask what happened, but here's a voter registration. Here's the number you can call because they've waived some of the rules, so some people who are felons might be eligible." He said, "No, sheriff told me it was drunk driving. I'd never vote again." And I said, "How long ago was that?" And he said, "You know, 13 years. So that kind of thing was in the Native population that I saw, and I'm sure it happened in other disenfranchised populations all around the country.
If anybody wants to instant message us, ask a question of Divas for Democracy, you can sign on to AOL Instant Messenger. Our handle is Kill Radio Station. That's one word, Kill Radio Station. You can also call in if you want to ask a question on the phone. Our number is 213-252-0998. Plus, go to divasfordemocracy.com and check out their website. So, after you guys formed an organization, what was the first big thing that you guys did? You collectively
made
did
t-shirts
something together. And is that when you knew that you were gonna sort of make your dent?
You can't be an organization without t-shirts.
The first thing
we did actually was we made this bumper sticker that says "Meanwhile in Baghdad," and we had a really very difficult time explaining that to about 98% of the population. Mm-hmm. And so then we superimposed it on a t-shirt over the cover of a Star magazine. Mm. So people could understand that this was supposed to draw your attention to what is really important and what's going on in the world. We live in frivolous times. And
we live in stupid times. Frivolity's okay, but stupidity.
Yeah. We live in very shallow times. And so sometimes, a lot of times, you have to remind people that there's atrocities that are going on, and not just in Iraq either. I don't want to make it. There's atrocities going on all over the world that we're contributing to.
There were atrocities going on before the war.
That's correct.
But I would say probably the first thing that we did that didn't involve, you know, lovely gifts for friends and family was that we helped shepherd. Joe and Joy, who isn't here, actually did all of the legwork, but we conceived of and decided to push through a progressive caucus in the California State Democratic Party, and there hadn't been a new caucus in 15 years.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
Tell me about that process. How did you
Joe, tell me about that process.
Well, it was actually came from a similar discussion to what we were just having, which is, what are sort of some things that could help strengthen the Democratic Party and really reinvigorate the party and bring our liberal ideas back into the platform of the party? Because clearly they were missing. Mm-hmm. There's a huge sucking noise when Democrats get up and talk about what's important to them. And interestingly, we sort of had parallel conversion with some folks who were up in Northern California also thinking about this idea of forming a progressive caucus. What we had seen was this groundswell of people, grassroots activists, very liberal people who were just chomping at the bit to really change things and see things get transformed. So there was a very, every year, and this is another thing, this is all top down, by the way, in the Republican Party, it's all top down. All these positions statewide are appointed. But in the Democratic Party, they're all elected. And so what happened was that largely through the grassroots campaigns that had at some point coagulated from the Kucinich people and the Clark people and the Dean people and the Kerry people, they had coagulated demographically. So now there were people broken out by geographic region, and they came to learn, and this is an astonishing thing also, that you just have no idea about this till you get involved in grassroots politics, that every single year after the election, the assembly districts, of which there are 80 of in California, are reorganized, and from those assembly districts, 12 people are chosen to caucus at the state convention. So there was a movement across the state to get grassroots people in these positions. And it was the first time, really, where the attendance at these assembly district meetings was outrageous. I mean, it had gone from 15 or 20 people to, in some cases, 250 people in, wow, in each district. So this was going on, and people were going through the election process, and across the state, 250 people who were new to the process were put into delegate positions, which is really exciting.
Yeah.
And one of the things that regardless of whose campaign you were in, you were given the message, get into the party. If you really, what you want to see is change, start getting into the party and become a part of it. It's not just enough to check off a box when you register. It's not, people must know that activism is not a spectator sport. It's active. People have to be involved. And so shortly after, and Dan, who's here with us as well, is also a delegate, and Joy, who's not here with us, but the three of us were chosen as delegates in the 42nd Assembly District, which is a very, very progressive district, actually. Probably the most progressive district in the country.
And what kind of power does that give you as a delegate? What do you get to do with that title?
Well, the most important thing is learning how the system works. It's really a ticket to education about the party structure.
You also get a license to kill.
Oh,
people don't know that.
That's fantastic. Now, for those of you not familiar, the Democratic Party was the those are those guys that they refer to on the other side of the aisle.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. So one of the great things was we were able to get connected with a lot more people. It also allowed us to be delegates to the convention, and we were allowed to vote on things that came up in the party, resolutions, ideas. Some people, one of the 12 members becomes a representative to the executive board, of which there's only 300 in the state. They help choose the national members that are going to go to the convention. So as far as power and what, in a way that you can tangibly explain, the biggest thing for me was education about the party structure. But what it also allowed us to do was think of this idea of what if we had a caucus of people who were really committed to progressive ideas and progressive paradigms, and what if we brought that caucus to the party and said, we really need a home because we're losing a lot of people. We have declined estates, we have independents, Green Party, nobody who feels they're being represented in the Democratic Party, and we need to open our arms to them and show them.
From within the Democratic Party, I mean...
That's right.
I'm asking, are they... Are they still liberal, the Democrats?
We just saw so many people just moving to the right.
One of the things I think that we found out was that there was no there. What I think we found out is that the Democratic Party was just a huge fundraising machine.
Mm-hmm. And so it's true they really don't know what they're doing?
Well, it's like everyone is concentrating on their campaign. There's nothing organized about the California Democratic Party, as far as I can tell. You know,
because labor unions have been so weakened and that was like always traditionally the base of the Democratic Party and their get out the vote people and their big muscle, and you know the labor unions are so weak now, so they lost a lot of their support.
But
so,
in a way that was it was actually good for us because there was that in a certain sense we got welcomed in because we had energy.
We were absolutely
which had no energy.
That,
energy, yeah.
That was the greatest thing of all was the party was very receptive to us. They shepherded us through the process, and despite a lot of contention about forming a a progressive caucus, which was originally thought that it was going to be divisive and that it was going to tear the party apart and et cetera, et cetera. They gave us a nice room at the convention. It seated 180 people. We had 400 plus people show up the first time. We got 400 plus charter members at our first meeting. We now have a membership of over 675. We've not been in existence for even a year yet. And so in April, it'll be a year, the year anniversary of our very first meeting at the convention last year. And we just, today, it's really exciting, actually, we just released our first position paper, which is a withdrawal strategy for Iraq. It's very comprehensive, and it's very progressive.
Hmm.
And it's exciting that it's out there.
I haven't put any thought into that at all. So we're going to leave Iraq then?
Well, I am.
We are so out of there.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the thing is, there's there's some things you can leave and still not get out of. That's the problem.
So
with
the
Iraq.
Divas for Democracy is sort of this. It's kind of, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's where we sort of try out stuff and where we come up with ideas that we may do on our own or may, you know, do through the Progressive Caucus. For example, the Progressive Caucus put on a speaker panel out of Iraq speakers at the, what was it?
The E-Board meeting.
At the E-Board meeting of the Democratic Party back in January.
And these are people recommending immediate withdrawal.
Yeah, yeah.
It was Ann Wright, Stephen Zunis, Michael Schwartz, Scott Ritter.
No, she wasn't. David Swanson.
David Swanson. From, after DowningStreet.org.
So, but a lot of the work... A lot of the work, the organizational work for putting on the panel was sort of done informally through the divas.
And I'm gonna blow Jo's horn here because she actually ran for chair and she is the chair of the Progressive Caucus.
I'm the Southern California.
Southern California.
Woo-hoo!
Well, it's
I share the chair.
Share the chair.
As we always do in the Democratic Party, we.
So do you think are we really living in an Orwellian nightmare where the people in power are basically just trying to stay in power no matter what, and the people who aren't in power, instead of focusing on the issues, are so busy trying to obtain power that
fuck
they
you.
Have no idea what's going on?
Can I say fuck on the radio?
Oh, fuck, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
I think that we have a terrible problem.
Darn, no.
Because we don't have clean money, we have a terrible problem with... let me just... preface this by saying one of the things that's very unique about the Divas for Democracy is we have incredibly different backgrounds. We all do different things, and we all have careers, something that occupies us to put food on our table, or sometimes that we struggle at to put food on our table. And
or as Bush would say, food on your family.
Food on our families. Some kind of strategy
followed by a series of and
our illiteracy are appalling.
Exactly. And other such nonsense. But what draws us together really is our core value system about really wanting to get this country and ultimately the world back into a place, and not even back, I would say even farther than it's ever been, really, from a global humanitarian perspective. And it's so I say that because our political activism is unencumbered by re-election, and it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the people that I'm asking to represent don't want me to represent them, I walk away and I have a job.
Right.
And I'm not worried about starving, and I'm not worried about what I'm going to do in the world after that. We have a terrible problem with that. All of our people that have to raise ridiculous sums of money to run for office, to run a campaign, it's out of control, and it's really prohibitive of people representing certain demographics in the country.
Well, it seems to be, to me, that generally speaking, in the world right now, good people aren't rising to power. I mean, certainly in situations, in environments where people are poor and religious and easily led, I mean, that's not a good environment for good people to rise to power anyway. But it seems like it's almost become, and in this country especially, almost like just prohibitive. Like you cannot keep your objectives, your true belief system, and get the votes. So at least my next question is, how progressive is this country really? Or, I mean, the group of us here in this room, are we just like totally out on the fringe, you know, in wanting the sort of liberal things that we talk about? Are we living in a fantasy world, or is all these phony polls, are they really misleading America into thinking that they're not as progressive as they are?
I think everybody wants the same things, but I think that people have been brainwashed. I think that the neocons have sort of co-opted this religious message, and people are voting against their best interests because
they've convinced Republicans they don't even need to be conservative.
Yeah,
and people
dropped that from their name.
People are voting for these huge tax cuts for the rich, and they're voting, you know, they're voting against
radical changes,
education, and they're voting against health care. Because you know, the neocons have cleverly sort of inserted God into their message, and they have a compliant media.
But is this not also a very religious country?
It is a very religious country.
Yeah, because when you don't have fucking health insurance, you gotta pray to God.
And I think a lot of the problem also is, I mean, we're all lucky enough we live in a place where there's a lot of political activism. Most of the people we commonly
know and higher education and multiculturalism
are politically active, and it sometimes just astounds me when I get at, what did George Clooney call us, some little world that we're out of touch? Yeah, because I sometimes feel really out of touch when I start up a conversation with somebody at work or someplace, and they A, don't have a clue, and B, don't give a toss. That gets me crazy, and I think a lot of the problem is that people's comfort zones are being invaded. I once had someone say to me, when we were just talking on a really light political matter, saying, you know, you're really a downer. And, I'm going, because I think really people don't give a shit until something horrible happens to them or someone they love. Yeah. Then suddenly they get angry, or they read and they say, how come? And they realize they haven't put their little drop in the bucket to do something, which is, I think, another part of the diva mode is to, you know, with me, I actually do have friends that aren't politically involved. They don't live in LA, but they don't read that much, and they're good Democrats, but say, hey, here's our website, and do you know that this is happening? Like just to shift gears, the South Dakota mess about abortion and
being outlawed under all circumstances,
right?
Or every circumstance,
and
incest,
said on
rape,
on
all of it.
On one of our radio stations
today. Well, let's
not
take it personally. Today. I mean, I'm kidding.
No, there was actually an editorial today on one of the CBS affiliates, and the man, and I just caught the tail end of it.
It's hard to believe this is happening in America. Yeah. It really is.
And he said, "So, what is the 13-year-old who was raped by her father supposed to do? Say, Dad, can you drive me to the hospital?"
She's supposed to
name the baby after her father.
The morning after pill if they go in within 24 hours, but that's neither here nor there. But just the fact that a lot of people aren't aware of this, a lot of people aren't doing anything, and we are, because Leah came up with a great idea, and here's Leah.
Yeah, you could just, you know, at this point, you can imagine, you know, a mother telling her daughter about the facts of life in South Dakota. You know, sometimes when a man loves a woman very, very much, he drags her into an alley and rapes her at knife point. And that's how we got you, honey. When's Daddy coming home? In 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Anyway.
We were mad.
Operation.
Well,
so what we decided to do, what I said as a joke, and then Carol took me up on it. When they passed this thing, I just sent out this email that said, you know what, I'm sending a big-ass box of wire hangers to the South Dakota State Legislature. And Carol wrote me back and said, you should do that.
And you did this.
And I did. I sent a huge box.
It's actually on our website. If you'd like to get an address for one of the senators, state senators that voted for this law, you can go to our website and click on the page that says Operation Wire Coat Hanger.
And it's divasfordemocracy.com.
Right.
And write to these people and write to your people and send hangers and just spread it around, because this is insane. I keep on saying that, you know, give us another year, and girls, we're going to be wearing red, white, and blue burkas because we're going to have no rights left at all.
One of the things that I keep thinking about in terms of voting, like you were saying before, how, you know, these things happen, you go, oh, well, you know, it didn't affect me, and then suddenly it affects you, and oh, I didn't vote, or I didn't, you know, do my part. But, you know,
or I voted for Nader.
Well, but you're also kind of set up. I mean, that's actually a good example. voting for Nader, for example. If you cared about the death penalty, which a lot of people do, you had a choice of voting for Bush, we know how he feels about the death penalty, or Gore, who is very pro-death penalty, as was Kerry. I mean, so you say, well, okay, but I have to vote for a Democrat because I can't vote for whatever those Republicans are calling themselves. But then I'm actually voting for a political leader who supports something that I think is really awful and barbaric and all sorts of other things. So I guess I have to vote for the guy that everybody's afraid to vote for. Except if I do it and everybody in this room does it, still nothing happens, you know, or worst case scenario happens, which is Bush gets elected. So what do we do about that?
Well, that's one of the reasons why we tried to infiltrate the Democratic Party, is so that we have some kind of input into who gets nominated, mm-hmm. you know, because that's really where the process, where you're going to get to choose between a pro and an anti-death penalty candidate. It's during the primaries, or who starts to, you know, into the primary race.
No kidding. I'm going to vote for a brown piece of paper over a Republican, as long as it's running on the Democratic ticket. But the truth is, there's a lot that the Democratic Party stands for right now that progressives do not.
But the key point is that everyone is so focused on presidential races. And really what we did is, right after the presidential race, we just said, you know, the shit really happens between. Mm. That's when the Republicans have taken over our country.
Yeah.
It's the off-year elections.
It's the 30 years of consistent electing crazy rapture neocon evangelical Christian people as dog catchers and city
school
councilmen
board,
and
yeah.
school board officials, and that so push
the
these policies
these
and they push these policies up and up and up until suddenly every car that's around you has a Jesus sticker on it. I mean, I don't know if I'm just more sensitive to it now, or if there's been a devolving of the country mm-hmm. that's been very, very precise and very driven for the past 30 years. The Christian Coalition knew that if they elected local dog catchers and school board officials, and that eventually they would have a president. And they were exactly right.
Yeah.
And they were able to, and this is one of the things, if you have an institution where every single week you go and you've got someone in a really imposing outfit telling you what you should believe every single week, you know what? A lot of people are going to believe it. And that's an incredible platform and an incredible network.
Especially,
and that's exactly why we decided to meet every week. Because we said, they got church, we got divas every week. And that's what we got to commit to.
I want to go back to a question you asked about Americans being activists or not. Because one of the things that the Christian right did was they actually co-opted the anti-slavery movement and channeled that energy into the anti-abortion movement.
Hmm.
So in a sense, they took the activism and they managed to focus all the people's angst and whatever on abortion. So they have a very committed core, and that if we're not as committed to them, they're going to keep winning. If we're not as committed as they are, and I can only beg and plead people to get out there now. I mean, the 2006 election cycle is really important, and you know we've got a bus going to San Diego on
That's
the 18th.
Right. For the sake of the listeners, why is 2006 so important?
Well, I mean, because they're all important, but you know, we could conceivably. I mean, I'll give you a scenario: we could take back Congress, we could impeach Cheney and Bush, and we can have Nancy Pelosi as president. I don't know the exact rules, but
someone else, you know, is what he means. Someone else.
But if it would be the Speaker of the House,
Elmo.
Whoever
that's
the Speaker,
right. Dennis Hastert.
No, we'd have to take back Congress.
Oh.
So we would have a Democratic president by 2007, and that's if people got out and did it.
And the interesting thing now is that there's a lot of people who are, well, let me just go back to a conversation we had a year ago about impeachment when we were talking about it. And people were saying, you know, it's stupid to talk about impeachment because unless we get the majority in one of the houses, it's not going to happen. And the compelling argument is impeachment of this administration, these representatives, Bush and Cheney, is a platform issue upon which Democrats can run.
Mm-hmm.
that it's as critical. It is absolutely ridiculous and backwards to say we can't even talk about impeachment until we get the House. No, we got to use impeachment as a platform issue. You know what? If you elect me, I'll bring impeachment charges.
But that's so mean.
That's not compassionate, forgiving.
And it's the most compelling argument for working toward it now is these are the midterm election issues that need to be. It's now March 7th, and we have very, very few, I don't know exactly in days, but we have 8 months until the midterm elections. And what I am really worried about is not hearing messages from our candidates. I'm really worried about it because they're afraid. They're afraid. And we're going to just keep pimping the same apathetic message that hasn't worked for us. And hasn't worked for us, and hasn't worked for us over and over and over again. And if we don't have, we have 55 Iraq vets who are running for Congress, and they're all Democrats,
right?
By the way,
right?
Which is astounding. And we are just hoping that their message of stop the war, get out of Iraq, stop the occupation, it's illegal, it's horrifying, what we're subjecting people to do, make them killing other people. It has to stop.
Kill Radio.
We're joined by DJ Chicken Leather, who's in the field.
I'm ruining the democracy now by being a totalitarian and taking over the broadcast, but it's for a good cause. I just want to remind everybody out there that there is a school board election today, and if you are voting, you're in the area, you have about an hour or so left, a couple hours actually, they close at 8, to vote. There's five candidates running for the one board, and it's for the school board as if they elect them. Apparently, if the mayor had his way, it would be under his authority to elect school board members. But until then, you, the voting public, can rush out and vote for these people, which is kind of strange because the election is split along party lines, and I don't know if you live in the area, but I have gotten a flyer or a phone call every other day for at least a month. So you figure they're pumping, what is it, calls aren't cheap. I guess you can get a Watts line, but all this printed matter, my father used to be a printer, so I'm looking at things that are die-cut, three-color print, stamped.
So they have the resources.
Yeah, you can imagine they've spent millions on this, and it's just for a school board, so you have to wonder what else is at stake in something like this.
Well, this actually has a lot to do with what we were just talking about. Davis for Democracy, this is important, right?
Yeah, this is democracy on the local level. And if you look at what's going on the national level, perhaps you can be more democratic on the local level here.
Well, absolutely. Chicken Leather, thank you so much for calling in.
Yeah, I just want to touch on the last thing. The other thing is, the South Central Farmers last week, they were given their eviction notice. This is a place of, I think, 12 or so acres downtown that grows corn and helps people in the community that would otherwise have to search for their food and stuff, and here they grow it and things. And apparently, the land was given to the people after the 92 riots, but now, through a loophole, the landowner has gotten the land back, and now he's evicting everybody. So he's just in it, to be honest, just to make money off this thing, and it seems that maybe saner heads will prevail, and the mayor has already expressed his interest in keeping this around, so we have to question if he did this when he was a council member, if he's still on the same kind of even keel now that he's mayor. He said, well, I think it's great and they should come up with a $14 million, but we're talking about farmers that basically are going food to live on.
Right.
I know they don't have $14 million, and of course, if Kill Radio had it, my God, we'd be sending the check over now. So,
where can people go to get more information on this?
That'd be the World Wide Web, southcentralfarmers.com.
All right.
Hey, thanks a lot, John.
Thank you.
Kill Radio is going to save your life, man.
Right on.
Bye.
DJ Chicken Leather guy person.
Yeah. Chicken Leather has his own news program, and he's out in the field quite frequently getting news for us.
John, so, can I just, I just want to really quickly talk about something that's really important for Californians, and that's our our Secretary of State election that's coming up,
mm-hmm.
and we have a really great candidate running, Deborah Bowen, who is absolutely committed to election protection and clean money, and it's an election that a lot of people don't pay attention to. People are unsure of what exactly that position entails and how important it is. And really, right now, we just had recertification of the Diebold machines, which have proven to be hackable. There's evidence.
Morning,
exactly. Yeah. I got my corn moisturizer and hacked into one just this morning.
Nationwide, people need to get active and find out if their areas are using these machines and what can be done about it.
Have to wonder. People are I wasn't even going to vote, but
I'm just going to float an idea here. Since you know how to hack these things, maybe we should take advantage of that fact.
Yeah.
I've just taken off my Democratic Party hat and joined the pitchfork revolution.
Right. No, I don't even know how to operate my iPod.
Well, they're hackable, and they're also owned by a corporation that's got ties to the Republican Party.
Hey,
that's
right. I will get you, Ohio.
There's a picture of, what was it, that woman that is she?
Connie McCormick.
There's a picture of her on the Diebold
flyer
shaking hands with the president of the company.
She's mm-hmm. the election representative for Los Angeles County, for you guys who aren't in the area. But
She's the registrar.
The registrar, thank you.
Yes, the LA County registrar who did stand in front of us and say, there's really no evidence that Diebold machines are hackable, and a lot of people really like using them, and I don't see what the problem is, and I really don't support one company over another, is actually on the Diebold flyer.
Amazing.
I know. How does that happen?
So why are you people picking on me?
Well, and if people are listening all over the country, it's time that you do pick on your registrars and find out what's going on in your county and in your state. And that's something you can do on a very grassroots and local level, which will help bring about change, hopefully.
And bring your flask. That's the diva way.
That's the diva way, too. But that's after Election Day, or that's after a really long night campaigning.
I was actually thinking how the Republicans have gotten so comfortable using illogical arguments to defend their policies.
They
just say things that don't make any sense, and they'll just keep saying them over and over and over again until you start to believe it. And I'm just wondering if maybe it's time the Democratic Party started making illogical arguments too, because a lot of the things we've been talking about tonight are logical. You vote for you vote bottom up, you vote at all, you care about issues, we should get out of Iraq, the war is illegal. These are all logical arguments,
just crazy talk and right. crazy science talk.
But it
worked for Bush and Hitler,
might
work for us.
If we could follow it up with something about Martians, and maybe we can actually take back this country.
We're actually planning to see if we can institute the rapture, right?
We were going to do a fake.
Ixnay really going to work now.
Everybody's
Ixnay on the apture, Ray. Well, just
renew.
I speak.
Renew.
As actors, I think Carol understands this, and you. This is because I used to act. There's this thing that, like, you have to commit. When you're on stage and you're doing something, you have to commit to it, no matter what it is. If you're not going to sell it to your audience if you don't believe it yourself.
That's a really good point. That's how I feel about the whole Democratic Party right now. Watch C-SPAN. Yeah. I feel like they're one big bad actor.
We're just like, oh, but...
They're like, we really ought to get out of Iraq.
I don't really believe what I'm saying myself, but you should believe it because I'm a sad little man. You know, it just doesn't...
It's very hard to be... a kind party.
And then you see
it's very detrimental to your message.
It's hard out there for a Democrat.
You see the like two or three or four or five congressmen and senators on C-SPAN that really do believe in the message are really fighting hard, and they speak so eloquently.
And they're all black.
And they look crazy. And they look like, it's like, wow, what are they doing in this movie? They're way too good to be in this movie.
Yeah.
And there is a fascinating thing that happens. That people who are very clear in their head about their message and are articulate about it are marginalized.
Yeah.
And I was just having this discussion actually at work, and I'm a physician. I was with a group of physicians, and we were talking about ethics and upholding your ethics. And I was making the point that in all levels of our of the country and in our careers and everything right now, that if you stick to your ethics, you're considered the lunatic fringe mm-hmm. because you're not going along with the majority.
You're weird.
Yeah, and right. it's extremely, I mean, literally to the point where things that are right now finally hitting the news were things that I was saying 2 years ago mm-hmm. to people, saying, you know, if you are listening to alternative media, you know that there are no weapons there. If you're listening to alternative media, you know what's really happening. And people were like, yeah, what? Well, you know, well, Clinton did it too, you know, or whatever
well, Michael,
the argument is. Yeah. You know?
Why do you hate America?
Why do you hate America
you're
and Apple
either with
Pie
us
and miniskirt?
Or you're with the terrorists.
That's right.
I mean, Michael Moore stood up there, what, was it 2 or 3 years ago, and basically spoke what everybody now considers to be common knowledge. And everybody thought he was a lunatic.
And so did a lot of foreign newspapers, mainstream mm-hmm. foreign or a little to the left, like The Guardian in England. And we've got the internet, folks. You know, it's time for everybody to come out of the closet, so to speak. And what was that network? I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Stop whispering. Just get out there and scream your heads off and get active.
Peace and ignorance. No, it's not.
And
straight.
If you say the same thing over and over and over again, I mean, we've learned this from the Republicans, and they're documented. They've done experiments with this where they've taken a subject and put him in a room with a bunch of people who were sort of in on the experiment, but the subject didn't know it. They show him a colored light, and it's green, and he says that light is green, and everybody else in the thing says no, it's blue, and he says, no, it's green. And they say, no, it's blue. It's blue. And after a while, the person will say, it's blue.
Well, sure.
And if you have to say the same thing over and over and over again and not back down. And that's what we haven't learned yet. Well, we've learned it here, you know, but that's what the Democrats haven't learned yet. It's
well, because progressives are interested in truth. As opposed to right wings are interested in
money.
Well, they're interested in instituting their point of view.
Yeah,
they don't care whether
point.
It's true or not. But Democrats, yeah.
Which is why they can make illogical arguments to defend it.
And Democrats are willing to admit that they might be wrong. I mean, true. You never know if something's
what?
Totally true.
We have the burden of proof. Yeah. So, what's next for Divas for Democracy? What is the actual next thing you're going to do? What's the agenda for your next meeting?
Actually, right now what we're working on is putting together a pilot for a radio show, ironically. Huh. And we are really trying to work at getting people from their couches to outrage. And really what it's about is giving people tools. I had an interesting, it was an anecdotal conversation I had at work, and I was just literally going into the shelves of medicine for some Zoloft because I was outraged about Alito. I was just outraged about it. I just could not even, I couldn't take.
Hate women? You love Alito.
Exactly. I just was just, the apathy had just.
Zoloft.
Yeah, exactly. Had just got under my skin and was ripping my heart out. And I said.
That's the terrorist within you.
That's right. Bringing out my inner terrorist, getting in touch with my inner terrorist. And I said to somebody that was in my office, you know, what is it going to take? What is it going to take? What is it going to take for the pitchfork revolution? We all get killed because we're one of the ones without guns. Mm-hmm. But what's it going to take for people to get pissed? And she said, well, I am pissed. I'm angry. And I said, really? Well, what's it going to take for you to actually do something? And she said, do what? What would I do? And that was a real tip-off for me, because once you get involved and you're totally enmeshed in the process, you forget that other people aren't. Mm-hmm. And they have no idea yeah. what to do. They don't know that bus trips go out to red districts to try and get those seats flipped. They don't know that people are out registering voters at the farmer's market. They don't know that there's a, you know, that you can set up your own website and start something, that you can send wire coat hangers to South Dakota and all the other people that will soon be following suit. They don't know that they can be elected as an AD delegate. They don't know they can try to start a caucus, or they can get on a radio show.
Or they
show.
Can stand on a corner with you know, a sign.
Or stand
I mean,
on a corner with
so
a sign.
Base, but
or,
you can do something.
I don't know if you guys remember, but when I first took the bus, it was not something normal for me. I mean, I signed up somewhere and somebody called and said, okay, meet me on this corner. And the next day, I was on a bus with no one I knew, going nowhere I knew.
Yeah.
But people have to get over that fear of doing things with people they don't know, and what kind of people are they going to be?
Putting it's, yourself out.
Because once you do it, you
end
you
up
make
with six
friends
best
and,
friends in a little club.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, and you can go. I mean, we've got the internet. It's the best gift. You can go to democracyforamerica.org. You can go to Move On. There's so many.
You can go to Kill Radio.
You can go to Kill Radio. You can go to Divas.
After Downingstreet.org. You can go to ImpeachPAC.org.
Right.
You can go
and you
to
can find groups in your neighborhood, in your community. And if there isn't one, you can start one and link up to another group that's a national group.
You can start with six or seven of your friends.
And, you could be a freeway blogger.
Yeah.
Whoa. Not that we
know anything
about that.
Or participate that in any way, shape, or form.
No way.
Something that you wanted to do, you could do that.
Right.
If you wanted to go get big pieces of cardboard from huge places that will give them to you for nothing, and then prime them with white paint, and then paint other things on top of that with black letters that are really big so people can read them, and maybe put one next to each other and find a place in the red district, say Pasadena or Glendale or Valencia,
or in your very own state,
put them
near
up
the
with
highway.
Zip ties that you prepared with a little hole punch. You could do that if you wanted to,
theoretically.
And you don't even need a freeway. Yeah. You can use a turnpike, a parkway, a state route, your local street, your corner,
a street sign,
a vacant lot.
Carol, seriously, why do you hate America?
Because there's just so much diversity, and it's just getting mind-blowing.
Well, hopefully one day we'll all be the same. Divas for Democracy, thank you so much
for
joining us.
Thank you, John.
The Kill Radio News. And everyone should go to www.divasfordemocracy.com and killradio.org, of course, and get involved. That's the message.
Right.
Get involved, damn it.
Get off your armchair.
Exactly.
Grab your pitchfork.
Get off your ace.
The rapture is not an exit strategy.
That's right.